With that, it is my pleasure to introduce to you today, first of all, Brad Neese. Neese, did I get it right, Brad? Okay. So Brad Neese, AIA Lead AP, is Director of Elements, the Sustainable Design Consulting Division of BNIM Architects. You may have heard of them. I think he's worked with Jason once or twice as well. Brad was the Sustainable Design Consultant for the LEED Platinum Certified Heifer International Headquarters in Little Rock, Arkansas, which won a 2007 AIA Top 10 Green Project Award and a National AIA 2008 Institute Honor Award. It's kind of a big deal. Brad is co-author of Green BIM, Successful Sustainable Design with Building Information Modeling, that will be coming out this spring. And we've got our other esteemed presenter, Dimitri, whose last name I'm also going to butcher. Kontianis. Thank you, Dimitri. And since joining Canon Design in San Francisco's office, Canon Design San Francisco's office, Dimitri has become an indispensable member of the engineering team, having worked on a wide variety of project types, from conceptual design through project completion. He is knowledgeable in the design and function of mechanical systems for facilities that demand environmentally responsible solutions, like we all do. Most recently, Dimitri led the LEED coordination efforts for the University of Maine Student Rec and Fitness Center and Cal State University Long Beach Student Rec Center as well, both of which are expected to be recognized with the LEED Silver Certification. So last but not least, I'd like to introduce to you Brad Harden. And Brad has over 7 years of architecture, sustainability, and BIM experience, both nationally and internationally. He has implemented BIM practices, trained associates, written articles, and lectured nationally for the AGC, AIA, and various other organizations. Brad currently is the Building Information Manager for McCowden Gordon Construction, where he has successfully integrated BIM into the fabric of the company, and he continues to train and implement those key technologies into the organization. So, let's give these three a very warm Living Future welcome.
Well, thanks for that nice introduction. Very excited to present today at this conference, and we'll start the discussion with an overview of how the information in a BIM model can be used to meet our sustainable design goals. And you know, as mentioned, our panel consists of myself, an engineer, and Brad, an architect. The other Brad is a construction manager. So we hope that by bringing these different perspectives to the table, you can kind of see the different approaches that we take to having great sustainable buildings and the outcomes that we're looking for. And in the spirit of the unconference, and we'll try to keep our presentation portion short and then turn it over to you guys for some interactive discussions, and then we can all meet at the end and talk about what everybody's discussed. And we left notepads at everybody's table there, a little sticky notes. So if you have any questions that come up along the way, jot them down so you don't forget them, and there'll be plenty of time for Q&A at the end of the presentation. So we've all seen these statistics hundreds of times at this point, and we all know that buildings are major users of energy, and they contribute to problems such as waste and pollution. So I think what this tells us is that we have a very big challenge ahead of us, but we're also in an industry where we can make a significant impact towards reversing these trends. We need to take an approach where we look more closely at our designs at every phase if we want our buildings to perform better. And these numbers are not getting smaller as fast as we'd like. In fact, quite the opposite is true. So it'll take everybody in our field of architects, engineers, and construction to really rally behind this and start to reverse the trends we're seeing. And indeed, our industry has begun to rally, and we're seeing things like the Living Building Challenge, the 2030 Challenge, for people to really start thinking differently about how we're designing buildings. The Living Building Challenge, as you're all aware, some of the aims include net zero energy, net zero water, responsible material selection, and optimal indoor environmental quality. And these goals, they're not very easy to achieve, so we need the ability to calculate performance metrics, such as energy consumption and CO2 emissions, and also a method to track materials, among other things, so that we can verify that if we are setting these high targets, that we actually are indeed achieving them. Because these goals are aggressive, we need to pursue innovative design strategies, and in doing that, we need to be able to assure our clients that these strategies will perform as expected and not compromise the building occupants' comfort. So BIM is a tool that we feel can help us achieve these goals, and that's going to be the topic of our presentation today. So as we move to implement BIM as a design tool, we're finding that we need to make some changes to our workflow process. And what this does is it gives us an opportunity to implement sustainable analysis into that workflow process. There are various analysis software tools out there, and they're not new, but the old way that we've been designing for years, the CAD-based design process, it didn't lend itself very well to interacting with these other tools out there. A user of these tools would need to create a separate geometric model in addition to the design model, the design drawings that they're putting together. These analysis tools weren't meant for designing buildings, they're meant for analysis, so the interface tend to be clunky, not very user-friendly, and it was quite an effort to come up with a building simulation model. But if any changes were made to the design, then you need to go through that difficult process over and over again. Now, design using BIM promises to make this process as seamless as possible. Unlike CAD, a BIM model is intelligent, and it knows that a wall is a wall, a ceiling is a ceiling, a floor is a floor. So it can take that information and transfer it directly to one of these analysis tools so that we're able to get pretty much real-time feedback on the impacts of our design decisions. And we can provide various types of studies once we've transferred this data to a software tool that can perform analysis. Things like thermal analysis, lighting and daylighting studies, solar studies, CFD analysis, life cycle studies, pretty much you name it, the possibilities are endless. They're not all available now, but there's definitely potential for the future, and that's part of what we want to talk about later on in the presentation. So by starting to analyze a building's energy performance at the very early conceptual design stages, we're able to make informed decisions about the design with predictable and quantifiable results. So I've been working over the past few years with my firm's design leaders to begin the analysis process at the earliest stages when we have the most leverage to make, strong decisions that'll have positive outcomes. Here you see two conceptual schemes that were developed for a recreation center at Cal State in Long Beach. And we took the two conceptual massing studies, transferred them to our analysis program to compare their relative performance for heating and cooling. And what you see here is that Scheme 2 has the preferable solar orientation along the east-west axis. By shading the southern exposure, we can eliminate the solar loads in the summertime, but in the wintertime, when the sun is lower on the horizon, we can actually get free cooling. So it's kind of the ideal solar orientation. And, what the table here shows us is that we're reducing both the peak energy and also the annual summed energy consumption for both heating and cooling because of the principles I was just talking about. And, here is a solar study of the same building. This is actually a lot further on in design. This was done during the design development phase of the project. But, you can see the concept I was just describing where in the summertime, the shading devices are doing a great job of keeping solar gain from going in through the windows. And if you look at the bottom images of the plan view, you can see in the summertime there's no direct sun hitting the floor. Whereas in the wintertime, we are getting that solar gain to help reduce the heating loads on the building. So, this is a way to sort of visually inspect the effectiveness of shading strategies. But in addition to the visual inspection, we can also perform detailed solar radiation calculations. And by taking an iterative approach, we can look at various shading options and compare their relative performance to one another. And then the calculations can be used to determine how to minimize solar radiation in the summer and maximize it in the winter, if that's what we're trying to do. You know, we can look at various options throughout the design process and determine which option performs the best. And we can compare different size shading elements, horizontal shades versus vertical shades, different angles of installation, and then we can use these calculations to take the concept and really optimize its effectiveness. Natural ventilation is another important concept to discuss if we hope to truly achieve the goals of a living building. Heating and cooling energy account for a large portion of a building's energy use, so if we can eliminate that load for all or part of the year, then we're well on our way. These images are from a manufacturing plant campus consisting of several buildings, and we started to look at opportunities to use natural ventilation in the building in the center there by performing a computational fluid dynamic analysis on the site to see how the wind patterns were affected by the surrounding buildings. And the image here shows that the building experiences a positive pressure on the windward side and a negative pressure on the leeward side, and it also identifies the magnitude of these pressures along each point of the building. So this analysis was used to help us identify the best locations for openings to help induce cross-ventilation through the building. Another huge consumer of electricity is electric lighting. So we look to maximize natural light sources as much as possible and design the electric lighting also to be as efficient as possible to really minimize the electric consumption by lights. And what we do here you see some radiance simulations, which is a photometric simulation that lets us analyze both the quantity and the quality of daylighting throughout a room that we're designing, and also, you know, make sure that we don't have adverse effects like too much glare, because, you know, too much can be a bad thing. If we're going for a LEED certification or something else that requires room-by-room analysis, then there are software tools out there now that, you know, pretty much at the push of a button, and it's not quite that easy, but pretty much at the push of a button, you can kind of see where you stand with relation to the indoor environmental quality credit 8.1 daylighting credit. And, you know, this can be very beneficial during the conceptual design stages because it allows us to assess the daylighting potential of a building very early. And also, you know, it tells us which areas of the building have the most daylighting potential, which areas could stand to have more. And, you know, as we're planning the building's uses, we can figure out which room types would benefit the most from natural light and plan accordingly. So, you know, what really becomes interesting is when you start to look at, you know, multiple factors and how they relate to one another. So daylighting is great in that it reduces electrical lighting power, but what it can also do, if you're not thinking about it, is increase the cooling loads in a building. So you need to look at, you know, different factors in unison to determine, you know, what truly is the best option. And these images here are from an administrative tower that my firm designed for the Tata Corporation in India. And the client was really strongly advocating an iconic building. You know, and part of what they wanted was an all-glass facade, which, you know, in India isn't necessarily the best design decision because of the extreme temperatures. So we knew that we'd have to take a real close look at, you know, what's really going to be happening with this building. And we looked at several options and compared their relative performance. And, you know, what we determined is that we could optimize a vertical tube shading system that would achieve the same thermal performance as a building with punched windows, but also, you know, allow for a much greater daylighting and, you know, much more even distribution of that daylighting. So by having these tools, as the engineering system design progresses, we can use the information from our design documents to perform detailed assessments of energy consumption. So with this information available, we can look at the targets that we set early on in the design process and test strategies that will help us get there. So, you know, each energy conservation measure can be tested individually to see its impact on energy performance. And, you know, that data, the performance data along with the cost of implementing a particular measure can be used to calculate the life cycle cost. And that way we can determine, you know, not only what are the most effective means to reduce loads, but, you know, also which ones are the most cost effective to get you there. This project here, or this table here, is from a project in Southern California. It was a medical office building, and our client set their goal as 30% improvement versus Title 24, which is the energy code in California and one of the most stringent energy codes in the United States. So we knew that we'd have to take a very close look if we wanted to achieve this goal. And we looked at several options for the building's HVAC systems, including your standard VAV design and also underfloor displacement and chilled beam systems. And, you know, we found that the chilled beam system was the best performing, which, you know, as a mechanical engineer, you know, we knew that that would be the case, but we were able to quantify the magnitude of it. Now, the setback with a system like that is that chilled beam systems are not very common in North America yet, while they're widely implemented in Europe. So, you know, this may cause a client to be hesitant to install sort of a cutting-edge strategy such as this. So we needed to have the method to demonstrate that the system is very effective at meeting their thermal comfort requirements as well as their energy performance targets. So here you see a CFD study of a typical office in that building with cooling provided by an overhead chilled beam system. And the velocity diagram on the left here shows that heat does rise up from the person seated at the desk and the computer on their desk, and it's drawn upwards towards the chilled beam. And the temperature contour diagram on the right, the colors aren't coming through very good there, but you know what it tells us is that, you know, while the there is heat coming off of the occupant and light, the ambient temperature is actually a cool 70 degrees, which is pretty much the ideal thermal comfort setting that you want in an office space. So these are a few examples of the types of engineering analysis that we can do with the information from a BIM model and in unison with energy performance analysis software. And now I'm going to turn it over to Brad Harden for the construction management perspective.